Damian Willis, and this is the Reporter's Notebook from the Las Cruces Sun News, a podcast in which we attempt to pull back the curtain on our reporting process while diving deeper into some of the biggest stories of the week. In this week's episode, we're talking about our newspaper's new reporting standards surrounding cops, courts, and crime, public safety reporting, as we're calling it now. Why, for example, are you seeing fewer mugshots of alleged criminals in news stories? Why are we adding editor's notes about sexual assault resources or suicide prevention resources or domestic violence support resources at the top of our stories now? Also, some stories are free. Some count against the number of stories you can see for free without a subscription. And some are premium, which means you can't read them without being a subscriber. Why is that? And how do we make those decisions in the newsroom? Things are changing in the way we're bringing you the news. But things are also changing in the way that our government agencies are providing us with information. I'm thinking most notably about the police shooting of 75-year-old Amelia Baca, an elderly woman suffering from dementia who was shot and killed by the Las Cruces Police Department on Saturday, April 16th. We'll be joined by Sun News reporter Justin Garcia, who covers breaking news and public safety for the newspaper, as well as Sun News news director Lucas Pierman. Justin, Lucas, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yep, glad to be here.
Over the past year or so, we've been having serious conversations on how we report on crime, public safety, and to some degree, even breaking news, which typically deals with crime, or at least has one foot in that coverage. Would one of you like to speak to that?
Sure. Yeah, I can start off here. So crime news, which often involves breaking news and going into public safety and going through the courts process, these are often the stories that get the most audience, right? There's an old saying in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads, right? You put it out on the front page and people will buy that newspaper, or in the terms of a website, you put it out there, people are going to click on it. So that is the types of stories in which our audience, the greater Las Cruces area, interacts with us the most, right? And that being said, it's the stories that we've got to get right. You know, it's our most important work that we do in some respects, because it has the largest audience. And since we're communicating with the largest audience, we want to get it right. And it used to be that news outlets, including TV stations and radio stations, had a mantra that you wanted to get it first, right? You wanted to get that story first. And the idea behind that is changing, right? It's not always responsible to get crime news out there first, because often the first thing you get is incorrect. And so in the past year or so, we've really wanted to take a step back and look at what we're doing and see how responsible journalism that is. And instead of getting it first, we want to get it right. And so we've created a number of action items around our public safety coverage to help us get it right, which we feel will in turn establish greater trust among the communities that we're covering. So I hope that helps set a framework today for what we'll be talking about.
Yeah, and I've always hated the "if it bleeds, it leads" expression, because it kind of mischaracterizes what we do and why we do it. We do it not for the clicks, but to inform the community.
Sure.
It's true, right? And it also kind of, that phrase begs the question, who's doing the bleeding, right? And those
exactly.
Are the people who are doing the bleeding are human beings on the other side.
Now, Justin, we still cover arrests, trials, convictions, and sentencings, but we approach those differently from a reporting standpoint.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The idea now, well, the idea before was much more what's interesting right now, right? So is there a prominent case, a prominent murder or robbery or sexual assault that the community is talking about that we just want to have an update on because we see it on the docket? Or is this a particularly sensational arrest? Stuff like that. Whereas now we try to take a much more holistic approach and say, okay, if we're going to say that this particular crime and this particular alleged incident is important enough to put into our newspaper, then we also need to say we are going to do our best to cover it from beginning to end. Because not only do we owe it to our readers, but we owe it to the people who are involved in the case. The way, I mean, in many ways, this is stuff that's going to live on the internet forever. And if we think that, you know, if some person is accused of holding up a convenience store is something that is worth writing about for whatever reason, we also have to acknowledge that that person may end up at some point down the road turning a corner and being able to live in a way that they weren't previously. And that story that we wrote, which is still alive and well on the internet and still available for everyone to see, can have an outstretched negative effect on that person's life.
Or they may end up being acquitted of the crime. And if we're not there to cover it, then all we have is that they're accused of it. And then that becomes the legacy. That becomes what's Googleable about them and not that they were acquitted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, the effort now is so just to kind of walk people through the process. When I look at the docket in the morning and I say, okay, is there anything new here? I decide, okay, yeah, this is a case that I think people would want to know about, or this is something that rises to the kind of has enough news value that it's worth disseminating out to people. And I make a little note and I put it on a little spreadsheet that's never ending and it needs to grow longer by the day. And I just make a little reminder that I need to check in with this case periodically. And that has presented some kind of obvious difficulties, especially right now when, you know, you might have a lot of the cases that you read about in the newspaper right now, you probably notice are from 2016, 2017, 2018. So in a lot of cases, these are court proceedings that have been going on for years and years and years. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. And that's not necessarily the norm, but it does kind of, it does sort of like make that process a little more daunting. But again, I mean, it's not putting down someone's name on a spreadsheet and reminding yourself to go check is a very, very, very small price to pay when you consider the potential harm that you are doing by not doing that.
Lucas, is there anything you want to add on that front?
Yeah. So one of our pillars moving forward definitely needs to be if we name you as being accused of committing a crime, we need to follow that through the court proceedings to the end, whether that person is convicted or acquitted.
Now, to both of you, I'm certain our readers have noticed the editor's note or the quote unquote trigger warning at the top of our stories recently. We provide resources for readers who might be experiencing something similar. Talk to me a little bit about what's behind that.
Yeah, so that came about a couple of months ago, back in January, when a couple of folks from L'Opinion reached out to me and were, frankly, they were disappointed in our coverage, specifically our use of terms like alleged victim and alleged incident. And this that kind of frustration was stemming from my use of those terms in an article about a man who was being sentenced for, if I'm not mistaken, for sexually assaulting a young girl. And essentially that conversation was, hey, you know, a lot of these terms are harmful and a lot of these terms are not. They're harmful and you know, in the efforts to maintain accuracy and objectivity, we are potentially doing more harm to not only the victims in these specific incidents, but to other people who have experienced sexual assault. And there's plenty of data that people can go and look up on their own to see like just how many people that includes. And so kind of coming out of that conversation was this idea of like, okay, well, we acknowledge that there are still a lot of these cases that we feel like are important and that we feel like the public needs to know about. So what can we do? What can we do then to reduce the amount of harm that these articles are potentially doing? And one of the things was letting people know at the very top of the article, hey, this article is going to talk about some stuff that might be hard for you or someone else to digest. And you can make the choice to read it or not, but you should know kind of going forward what's down here. It also provides that resource to like for sexual assault articles, it's L'Opinion. For articles that involve domestic violence, it's La Casa. For articles that involve suicide, we put the National Suicide Awareness Hotline up there. And the idea is just to acknowledge that A, these articles are difficult to read, and B, there are people who might not otherwise have access to these resources or might not be aware that these resources exist, but because of our reach as a newspaper, might be aware of us. And so just trying to bridge that gap and just do a little bit of harm reduction where we can.
Shifting gears a little, COVID-19 basically derailed the criminal justice process. It feels like we're starting to pull out of that a little bit now. We're seeing jury trials again. I had jury duty from October through December of last year, and even then, it clearly was not back to normal. Justin, you've spoken to the DA's office and public defenders and the courts. What does that backlog look like right now?
Well, just for context, just today we published a story, and we're recording this podcast on April 21st. We published a story today about a man who was convicted and he was indicted by a grand jury in the summer of 2016. And that's not super uncommon right now. A lot of the cases are 2018, 2019, 2020. Like you said before, Damien, COVID was a big factor in that. But it's one of these things where it just kind of depends on who you ask. Some people have told me that it's the fault of the judges. The judges will often say that there's only three of them and there are, you know, a lot more cases than they can handle in terms of criminal judges.
You know, that's kind of a big deal, especially if you're remanded, you know, for pretrial detention. If you're sitting in jail for 4 years, you can't sentence somebody to county jail for more than 364 days. But meanwhile, we've got people who have been sitting in there for two or three or four years.
It's absolutely true. And jail officials have told me that they don't have the resources to support that kind of stuff. That they're not a prison, they don't have the same kind of programming or resources that a prison, you know, is built to have people incarcerated for years and years. And so it's creating not only kind of a bad situation for the inmates, but it creates a bad situation for the guards and for the staff. And it's not ideal for sure.
Without getting too far into the weeds, I want to talk about a recent case. Last Saturday evening, the Las Cruces Police Department was called out to reports of Amelia Baca, an elderly woman. She's reportedly 75 years old, who family members told the Sun News suffered from dementia. She was shot and killed after police said that she refused to drop the knife or knives she was said to be wielding. We're not getting a whole lot of information out of the city or the Las Cruces Police Department right now. What can each of you tell us about the situation, particularly as it applies to our ability to accurately report on the way events unfolded that night?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really tragic and terrible incident for sure. Information from the police department from the city is often in our newspaper, it's often kind of colloquially referred to as being official, right? Why that information is important to us is because it allows us to sort of say with a lot more certainty that something has occurred or that a particular detail is not only being confirmed by us, but also being confirmed by another institution. And so when that information doesn't come out, it does create sort of this question of legitimacy, not only in our minds as reporters, but also in the minds of readers, where I think they sort of wonder, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? Why hasn't this other source of information that I trust, why haven't they put out the same thing?
Lucas, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, piggybacking on what Justin said, in this situation, there were a few eyewitnesses to what happened. One of those is the officer who is shot their gun. And this officer talked to other investigators, has said, here's my account of what happened. That account has not been released to the media, right? I mean, there is an account out there of what happened, and we're not hearing it. And, it's been almost a week now and nothing. And so in other cases of where there is a police shooting of high interest, there have been press conferences, there have been, news releases that have been longer than just a couple paragraphs. And in this case, there hasn't been, which is what's going on. We don't know. We've had to talk to the family to get their point of view, right? There were certainly people from that family that saw what happened and said, hey, here's our version and here's why we're concerned. And so far, that's what we're going with.
Really, and kind of the only side of the story that we're getting. And I would add to that, that when you talk to, neighbors who may have observed it, you might encounter people with different stories, different accounts of what they saw. And if we're not getting the other side of that story, then it's really hard to distill the actual facts of the case.
Yeah. And well, I would even kind of take it into a different direction and say that it sort of raises the question of responsibility and accountability, right? Like, by acknowledging that this thing occurred for the city and for the police department, by acknowledging that this thing has occurred and saying, this is the process here, what you tell people is that you are trying to be accountable to them. And that's why that stuff is just kind of generally speaking, that's why that stuff is important. Because as diligent reporters and as good journalists, we try to talk to as many people so that we can have the best possible understanding of what has occurred at a location. And the police department's view or the police department's representation of that is ideally only one single sort of piece of that pie. But it is an important piece. I mean, it's an important piece because it has a little bit more weight behind it, because these are people that are either elected into positions or appointed into positions of power and authority. And so, yeah.
Yeah, you make a really good point, Justin. It really is about accountability and holding these systems, particularly these criminal justice systems, accountable to the public at large. And there's no one to do that if we're not there, if we can't get the information to do that accurately and appropriately. So going back to kind of our pivot, our shift in public safety reporting and our strategy for doing that, what is the goal of all of this? And how does it serve our readers better than what I guess we'll call the old way?
Yeah, the goal is to establish trust with the communities that we cover. And the genesis of this change in public safety reporting has generally come from, larger cities within the USA Today network, where a lot of the reporting on crime came out of communities of color, right? Various neighborhoods where readers were picking up their newspaper, logging on to their newspaper's website and reading about crime in this community. And that was the only thing that they were reading about this community. And so newspapers took a step back and talked to leaders of those communities and said, are we doing this responsibly? Like, there are other things that are happening in this community that we need to tell, right? And so let's not just take the narrative that we're getting from police that, hey, this happened, and let's get it up on our website as quickly as we can, or, get it in the paper without further questioning. No, we're going to go into those communities and talk to the people and add the context to those stories, right? If there are a bunch of aggravated assaults that are happening in a community, why? Let's ask that question. Let's go to those communities and find out a story that gives so much more context. Once you have that context around that story, then you can start looking for solutions, right? And so, you know, let's add data, let's add context. And with that data in context, the community, the society at large, can start looking for solutions to solve whatever might be those trends in crime in a certain community. And once you do that, you become much more trusted by those communities. And that is the ultimate goal of this change in our public safety reporting.
Justin, is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, I would just kind of reiterate something I said before, that I think it's important for us as people in the media and in the news media specifically to acknowledge that we are also a institution of power. And so when we choose to do something, we are exerting that power because we have the ability to, you know, send information far and wide. And so it's really, really important that we think about how are we using that power? Who is this power affecting? And why are certain people being affected more than other people?
Exactly. Tell us a little bit, Lucas, maybe this is a question for you, about how we decide on whether a story is free, metered, meaning that it's behind the paywall, or it's premium, which means that only subscribers can access it.
Sure. And what we mean by a paywall is on our website, if you are not a subscriber, I believe you have access to 3 stories before you hit what's called a paywall. And then you have to be a subscriber if you want to read further. So this allows somebody from outside of our community, if they just have, you know, one story of interest that comes on, they can read it right without being a subscriber. But those that want to read a lot of our content, they're going to be hitting the paywall a lot, right? Unless they become a subscriber. So that's what we mean by metered, is it's among those 3 articles non-subscribers can read. And so some of our articles, we want to say, this is free. You know, you can read it whether you're a subscriber or not. You're not going to hit a paywall. And those are things like missing children, right? We don't want to limit that. There are some stories of urgency that people need to know that you know, this is a matter that is going to affect. It's of dire public interest to know right away.
It's imminently of public safety.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. And so. Those are our free stories, right? And we don't have a lot of stories that we designate free, but we have that option in case we need to. We also have metered stories that, well, let me talk about the premium next. So our premium stories, this is content that is exclusive to the Sun News that you're not going to find anywhere else. And so we want to say this is a value, right? We have reporters that are out in our communities that are getting these stories that are, you know, they're not just turning around news releases, which go to all media. No, we're taking that step further and we're going out and talking to people and we have this exclusive coverage. And we believe that is worth paying for, right? That's this is work, and our community should support the work of journalists by subscribing to their paper of record. And so those are our premium stories. And if it falls within those two, you know, free or premium, it's going to be metered.
Somewhere on the spectrum in between free and premium.
Right. Yeah. It's not, this may be a story that's based on a news release that every media has.
It may be courtroom coverage or coverage from court documents.
Because we're the paper of record, that needs to be in our paper, but it's not necessarily exclusive, right? That's going to be metered content.
Right. It's not a conversation with Penny Dunkley, who was mauled by dogs while out on a walk.
It's the first story in that series that everybody kind of reported. But we went and talked to Penny in her as she was recovering in rehabilitation. And that's something that was exclusive to the Sun News.
Right. Exactly. I'd like each of you to talk a little bit more about this pivot and why it's important, what it means to readers. What else would either of you like to add?
Yeah, I'll go first here. The one thing that readers might notice first and foremost about this change is that we are, except in rare instances, we are no longer running mugshots, right? Mugshots are what somebody who is accused of a crime, they're usually booked into the Doniana County Detention Center. The jail will take a photo of them and they will put it up on their website. And when a person was accused of a crime, we used to run their mugshots, right? Like, hey, here is this person. And we've pivoted away from that. What is the value in running that person's photo? It's going to be up there on our website for a long time. And if you put it out onto social media, Facebook or something, you know, people will see that and they will make judgments about this person. And research has shown that if you show a mugshot, you know, a person in a jail clothes,
an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, right. And they're more likely to think that that person is guilty. And so we're influencing our story by running those mugshots. We don't need to do that, you know, and so we'll just run most stories without mugshots. In some instances, there could be an argument made for running them. If somebody is accused of a very violent crime and they're on the lam and the public needs to look out for this person, right? That's an argument that could be made for running a mugshot. If it's a very prominent person, an elected official who's arrested for DWI, maybe that's an instance where it would be important to run a mugshot. I don't know. These are conversations that we have to have on every single story. It's not we don't want to paint with a broad brush, every single instance. It's like, well, let's talk about this specific story and whether it makes sense to run a mugshot. And for the most part, we're just not going to run them. And that includes mugshot galleries, which we never really used to do much at the Las Cruces Sun News, but some other newspapers did. And you'll see them running those mugshot galleries far less than they used to. And one of the reasons it goes back to, if we name you, we're going to follow you through that entire process. So a lot of these mugshot galleries included people that their cases were not being followed through on by the newspaper. And so to solve that, you're just going to get rid of running mugshot galleries.
There are also some cases when after a person has been convicted, and I go back to the story that we published today from Justin, that we didn't run a mugshot in. Now, sometimes we would, but that also is kind of dealt with on a case-by-case basis in the newsroom.
Yeah, and if we are, in some instances, it makes sense for us to go to the courthouse and do some reporting. And, you know, could we get a photo of somebody that's, in the courthouse and run that photo? And for very public, high-profile crimes and court cases, that's likely what we would do.
So, Justin, Lucas, and Les, do either of you have anything to add about what we've talked about today?
No, I don't think so. I think the only thing I would say is that, you know, I mean, a lot of what we're talking about here is kind of not only the nitty gritty of kind of what happens in our newsroom every day, but I think, and we're doing it in a format as a way of trying to communicate with people, with the most amount of people in an easy to access way. But I think I know on my end, I'm always willing to answer readers' questions about, you know, hey, how come you made this choice in a story instead of making that choice? Or how come you decided to write something this way? Or how come you're not covering this or anything like that? I mean, my email is attached to the bottom of every single story I write. And I always try to take readers' questions really, really seriously. So if anyone listening to this is ever curious about, oh, you know, how come, what's going on with this story or what's an update to this story, I hope that they know that they can reach out to me and I'll always respond back.
Anything else, Lucas?
Yeah, hold us accountable, right? I mean, we're out there holding other people's police and other official agencies accountable, right? That's our job. And the public needs to hold us accountable, right? If they don't like the way that we're reporting something, tell us, right? And the way that these changes, these public safety changes were first came about was because communities of color in larger cities went to their news media and they said, this isn't right. You know, something's wrong here. And so they had a conversation and they talked about ways that they could be more responsible in their coverage. So if you look at the Las Cruces Sun News and you say something's not right here, you know, we don't like the way that this is coming about, come to us, talk to us, right? Hold us accountable. And we're happy to have those conversations.
Well, thanks again, Lucas and Justin. I sure appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
And you know, Damien, in the coming weeks, there's a new Spider-Man movie coming out. And with great power comes great responsibility. And I think that's what we're trying to figure out here.
We always end with some sort of pop culture reference, apparently.
I'm just trying to fix my Wordle streak, Damien. You know where I'm at.
Justin, how's your Wordle streak coming along?
It's not good. I for the first time ever, I burned all of my guesses and did not get the word.
You went 0-6, huh?
Yeah, I went 0-6. But today was the start of a new streak.
You know, with great power comes great responsibility, Justin.
Well, power is actually a really good Wordle word. I'm going to use that for my starter.
P-O-W-E-R. Yeah.
That's going to be my starter.
That's a nice starter. You know, this is a little off topic here, but speaking of Wordle, you know, I'm a big fan of the NMSU basketball team, and I'll go to games. And they had five players on their teams whose last names were five letters long. I waited almost all season for those five to get on the court at the same time for the all Wordle team, and it never happened. Four out of five was the most that we got.
A missed branding opportunity, frankly.
It was.
Oh, Jesus. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Reporter's Notebook. We also have a free newsletter sharing reporters' stories about, well, about how we report stories. We hope you'll continue following all of these important stories and the rest of our reporting in the Las Cruces Sun News. A huge thanks goes out to Lucas and Justin for joining us this week. You can follow Justin's work and, when news breaks, Lucas's work at the Las Cruces Sun News. Also, please subscribe to this podcast, available on Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeart, TuneIn, Stitcher, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. This has been The Reporter's Notebook from the Las Cruces Sun News. I'm your host, Damien Willis. This week's podcast was written and produced by me. Please visit www.lcsun-news.com to read all our local reporting, brought to you daily by reporters who live and work in Las Cruces. For all of us at the Sun News, thanks for listening.